Welcome to Real Roulette with Zach and Biggs. I'm Biggs.
And I'm Zach.
So today we have the independent horror film, Monsters.
Oh, is it horror?
I don't really. Not really.
Yeah, I don't really think of it as
Wasn't
horror
it
movie.
Like placed in the genre like that though?
Yeah, but I mean, to me, it's not a horror movie.
Yeah, it was a little misleading where it was.
Yeah.
Clearly somebody at Netflix is just like, I don't know, it says Monsters. Let's put that Charlize Theron movie in there too. Sounds like a horror
and
movie.
And the Halle Berry one.
That's right. Monsters Ball. Uh-huh. Yeah. I'm surprised they didn't score that movie with Monster Mash.
No, I know, right? I mean, that's the logical choice, but here we are.
Okay, so what's the name of this director?
Gareth Edwards.
Gareth.
Yeah, he's...
I picture him with a beret. I picture him right out of film school.
Yeah?
Yeah.
You think he eats baguettes and chain smokes as well?
Maybe.
He loves French cinema?
If he smokes, he definitely smokes French cigarettes.
Or cloves.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. I used to smoke cloves
Me
for a
too.
Long time, too. They taste
you can't
so
get
good
them
on
now.
Your lips. Really?
Not in Montana.
They're illegal?
Yep.
So if I was to move in some cloves, I could make some serious cash?
I don't know about serious cash, but you
could
definitely
could
make
like
some cash.
$5. So the director of this just put out Godzilla, which
sure
is out
did.
In theaters right now.
Godzilla, his second ever movie.
And it was kind of interesting watching this movie, and I could kind of see how we would get Godzilla.
Mm-hmm.
Just, I guess, based on, like, it's more people's reactions
yeah.
to what's going on.
And you can see, like, he does a great job of giving you the understanding of, like, the devastation of what these giant creatures can do, even though in this movie you don't see them all that much. And it really gives you, like, imagine what we could do if we gave this guy a budget.
Now, what was his other movie? Didn't
this.
He have another one?
This.
Oh, that's it.
This
huh?
is it.
So it's just this and Godzilla.
Yep, these are his two movies.
And he just got slated to do Boba Fett. That was some big news,
yeah.
right? The
yeah.
new Boba Fett movie.
Yep.
And that's confirmed. That
yep.
is confirmed now. So
that he is doing it. And it's Boba. Yep, he's in. He's made a big... But I mean, we'll talk a little bit about... Do you want to talk about the making of this movie now or a little bit later?
Wherever it applies. If
okay.
you feel like you need to get it now,
well, I was
fine.
Just going to say some things like... You go from... Okay, so he wrote the movie, storyboarded the movie, shot the movie, cast the movie, and did every single effect shot by himself.
Wow.
Yep, every single shot by himself.
That's pretty impressive that he did...
Yeah.
Like he wore every single hat.
Yeah.
How long did it take him to make this movie?
Oh, quite a long time. I think post-production was like 7 months.
Wow. So, see, I think it came out in like 2011, right?
2010, yeah.
Okay.
And it's listed at a $500,000 budget, and that was the budget they had. But he talked about they came in way under budget. Because basically they paid for some pretty good, as good as you can get on a small budget cameras. And they paid the two main stars a very little bit, the SAG minimum. And they got some money, obviously, for set construction. And then everything else was just Gareth.
Oh, a little off topic. I just wanted to thank Shane Castle for doing a write-up on me. And like they mentioned our podcast, we got a big bump. So
Yay.
Anybody's listening because of the Helena Vigilante, thank you.
Hello. Hopefully you made it through like the...
I will name you all if you tell me who you are.
We'll do a read off. We'll put you in the closing credits.
Yeah, just like the Real Roulette page and send me a message. Let me know who you are. Yep, we'll list
we'll
you
We'll get
all,
it done.
Much as they do in all these Kickstarter things.
That's right.
Okay, so shall we start like we always start with the trailer?
Hit it.
Okay, so here's the thing. Trailer, pretty visual, but it's getting pretty old not being able to play trailers. So here's what we got.
Our planet may be doomed, our Earth devastated. The monsters are in revolt, and civilization is in chaos. Godzilla is laying waste to New York. Rodan is attacking Moscow. Manda is smashing London, and Peking trembles under the wrath of Mothra. Our battle cry must be, destroy all monsters. Who can say which country or city will be next? We must unite and destroy all monsters. Is there a way to defend against Godzilla, Rodan, Manda, and Mothra? The answer is no. Let our battle cry be, destroy all monsters. Be prepared. See for yourself, in color from American International. Destroy all monsters.
Monster, 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 monster.
This picture is rated G for general audiences. Destroy all monsters.
Monster, monster, monster.
I wonder what the movie's called.
I don't know. I have no idea.
Yeah, it's really, it would have been nice if they had said it at least once.
Okay, so there you go. That was the closest I could get to a trailer for this film, because it is about monsters destroying
and
things.
You mentioned the trailer's very visual. The movie is very visual as well.
Yes, it is. Done real, like, I mean, cinematically.
It looks really good.
Pretty good for, like, an independent film. I was really amazed.
Yeah,
like,
I mean, considering the budget you're working with, it looks really good.
No, the special effects.
But again, when you consider...
Not as much, but everything else is pretty grade A.
And so. Even some of the long shots really aren't all that bad.
Yeah, I mean... I would say that the monster designs need a lot of work when we get into that. That's not being critical, really. I mean, it's just because I know what it is. Mm-hmm. I'm just saying, like, the rest of it, I would say, looks like a grade A Hollywood movie. Mm-hmm. Not special effects.
Yeah.
But, Jesus, the dude did it all himself.
Yeah, I mean,
so you gotta...
when you consider, like, how they were made, they look way better than they should. That's for damn sure.
And when you consider that the monsters really aren't the star of this movie.
No, not at all.
Yeah, and it, ironically, it's like a Godzilla movie that way, because Godzilla is never the star of his own movie.
Nope.
It's always the people around him.
Yep.
You want to walk us down this trail here?
We open up... We've got our credits going, and they fill us in on a little bit of backstory. It's 6 years since since we discovered life on other planets. We sent some probes. They came back, and some spores.
Now, was it that we discovered life on planets? I thought it was that they were looking for life.
We were looking and found it.
Okay.
I mean, you can't bring back alien spores without discovering life.
True.
So, I mean, I felt like that was...
Okay.
We bring the spores, come back with the samples from the probes, and they start infecting the trees, and eventually we have full-on alien monsters roaming the planet. So now it's 6 years later, we're in a place where it's sort of normal for people in these areas to just see a dead monster. Half of the U.S. is wiped out, almost all of Mexico is wiped out, and there's a big-ass infected zone in between the two.
Yeah, and the infected zone seems to be, I mean, pretty much in Mexico, right?
Yeah, there's a little bit on the Texas border, and a little bit on, like, the Southern California border, especially toward the further west you go, the more the infected zone takes up at the U.S.
Yeah, they show a map a couple of times of the infected zone, so which is just straight up called the infected zone.
Yeah, it's
now.
Literally the infected zone. That's not what we're calling it.
Yeah. So, well, we start out essentially in Mexico.
Well, we start out with that cool scene of, like, the found footage camera scene of the soldiers driving through, as it gives us the title.
That's
and we just
right.
see a monster come in and just take them the fuck out.
Yeah, it looks a little bit like...
I call it a land kraken.
A land kraken?
Yeah, it looks like a land kraken.
Fair enough.
Because it walks about on land, but it's got tentacles and, like, a squid head.
It is unusual that you don't see the monsters much in this movie, but they, like, show you one, like, immediately in the opening scene. That definitely, like, broke from formula right
Yeah,
there.
They wanted to hook people in with the cool monster stuff right away. And have you seen Godzilla?
The newest one?
Yeah.
No, I haven't.
He does
yet.
Something similar with that, where he starts by showing monster stuff, then cut away to the people's story for a while, and then slowly reintroduce the monsters.
I've heard that every time he shows Godzilla, it's always from a person's point of view, too. They never just have, like, a cutaway shot of Godzilla. Like, it's always when somebody's seeing Godzilla.
There's a lot. The overwhelming majority are when people are seeing Godzilla, but there are shots. Like, there's one shot of him literally just getting up and walking back into the ocean. This is just right on him.
Okay.
Yeah, so those shots are definitely there. They're just, you're right, though. For the overwhelming majority
know.
Are
I'm
people.
Just, I'm just, the critic's right. I'm just repeating it. I've not seen it.
The overwhelming majority of them are from people's, and that actually works. It's a good trick that they do with this, too, where you see people looking at it. It gives you, it sort of makes the scale of them even more impressive when you shoot from that angle.
So our protagonist in this movie,
Andrew
at least
Calder.
At the start,
he's running around. He's a photographer.
A wartime photographer. It seems like.
Yeah, he makes some comments later on about how he found out early on that pictures of, like, happy kids.
Oh,
and
wait, hold on. I got it right here.
Oh, hey.
Doesn't that kind of bother you? That you need something bad to happen to profit from it?
You mean like a doctor?
You know what I mean.
Yeah, now you mean. Come on.
Thank you.
You know how much money your father's company pays for a picture of a child killed by a creature? $50,000. You know how much money I get paid for a picture of a happy child? Nothing. You know where that puts me? Photographing tragedy. I don't cause it. I just document it.
There you go. He doesn't cause the misery. He just documents it because it gets him money.
Yeah.
So, yeah, there you go. So that's basically his trade. He's like, you could substitute him for any wartime photographer.
Yeah, he's basically a DMZ photographer.
When I started watching this movie, and I think I talked maybe outside about this, but I felt like a bit of a bait and switch with this movie because you look at the cover and it's like monsters. And it's like you think it's going to be about monsters, and it's... Well, I'll get into the overall theme, I think, when we... A little bit later down the line, but part of it, I think, is it's really about, like, how people are affected in, like, war zones.
Yeah, by tragedy and...
Yeah.
Yep, and you see that very much.
Yeah, I mean, you really could, like, swap this out for Iraq or Afghanistan and a lot of parts, and it would make sense.
Yeah, and it's a metaphor that's done pretty well, I think.
Yeah, fuck it. Let's just throw out the metaphor, like, now, and then get into... And then we'll
get into plot.
Yeah, then we'll back everything up. But I think that essentially what this movie is about is that people are essentially monsters.
Mm-hmm.
And I will back it up as we go along the plot with all the things, but I think it's essentially about how people hurt each other in various ways.
Yep.
And then at the very end, you kind of see that the monsters have some humanity in them, and yet, like, the people also have humanity in them, but they're constantly doing things to each other. That,
And so you get the metaphor, and then you also get the metaphor of the literal. Like, there's that great scene where they're sitting with their convoy and talking, and they ask, like, have you seen the wall? Have you seen any of the creatures? And they're like, do you think the wall works? And the guy just goes, I think the U.S. is spending a lot of money.
There's a total tone in this that's a lot of it is about the border between Mexico and the U.S. I mean, it really is. Like, this whole debate that you can build a wall and keep all the immigrants out and stuff.
Mm-hmm. And then you get the third metaphor, the war stuff, again, where you see these families and they're like, so do you feel safe here? And they're like, as safe as you can be.
Yeah.
Like, this is where we are. It doesn't really matter.
Yeah, so I think we open up with, what, the photographer?
Yeah, and he's played by Scoot McNairy. Which I just need to say because I like saying Scoot.
Scoot.
Yep. And Scoot's running around. He's looking for people injured in the attack, the creature attack. And he's looking for one person specifically. It's the big boss at the publication he works for, his daughter. And he's supposed to find him for one of his coworkers and get her sent back.
Well, for his boss, right?
Well, no. Remember, he has that phone call and he's talking to his coworker. And his coworker was supposed to get him. His coworker called him and said, you're already here. Will you send her back?
Oh, I see.
Yeah.
Okay. So, he was kind of upset about that.
Exactly. Yeah. He was like, this is a waste of my... Like, he's like, I should be working. But he eventually agrees to it just to get rid of her more than anything. And so they set a plan and they start hitchhiking to try to get to their town. And they drive and talk. There's a lot of talking in this movie. It's a very talky movie. And some of the dialogue, like, I really, really like this movie. Some of the dialogue is really good. And some of it you can tell has grains of good ideas, but it could have been worked over another time.
It is some of the hallmarks of like early independent films. There's a lot of talking, which most independent films have a lot of talking, but there's certain dialogue that you're like, you probably could have cut that and had a better movie, but I think it's because they're learning.
Well, now I'll actually go into some of the behind the scenes stuff again.
Okay.
There's only two like real actors in the movie, and that's the main two we follow. Everybody else is just a local from where they were shooting.
I could believe that.
And so that's why. So eventually they gave up on the script for a lot of scenes entirely. And just he told the two actors, like, these are the points we need to hit along the way, everything else. And the first cut of this movie was 4 hours long.
Wow. Wow.
Yeah, they had 100 hours of footage to work through.
Thank God he cut that shit down, dude. This is not a Richard Kelly joke.
No. And you can tell he knew. He was like, I need to make the best version of the story. But when you sort of give up on the script, you have to see where you... Especially when you're working with basically only two actors. And really only one who has a long history. The reason the actress was chosen... And I think she's pretty good. She's not great, but she's all right. She was at the time dating and is now married to Scoot McNairy. And when Gareth Edwards was casting actors for both those roles, he wanted people who were in a relationship in real life. Yeah.
Yeah. That makes sense.
Yeah. So it wasn't like a nepotism thing. We're like, well, to get Scoot, we're going to get his wife. It was like, well, these two clearly know how to work with each other and have that romantic chemistry. And it's going to make their life a lot easier.
Boy, if he knew what I knew about marriage, he would have been
shocked. No kidding. You can tell Gareth was not married at the time. Okay, so... They're rolling through and they are looking for, they're going to get on the train to try to get to the next town. And this is where he takes a minute to call his son and she calls her father to let him know she's coming back. And her name's Sam Winden and she's talking to her dad and her dad just keeps bringing up, now have you called John? And we later learn John's her fiance. And she's like, I'll get around to it.
Yeah.
Like
she's clearly not happy. Not wanting to be with John.
Yeah. She's not pleased with John.
Yeah, John's a douche, I guess.
John's a douche. Honestly, Scoot's character is kind of a douche, too. So.
Yes, he is. And there's a lot of...
there's a lot of evidence of his douchery.
There's things that she does that's pretty douchey, too.
I mean, it fits the metaphor. They're sort of monsters. But it's in the best words.
We'll get into the specifics as we get
there. They're monsters, but they're still good. Like, in general, it's a very optimistic movie in terms of the metaphor. That, yeah, people are monsters, but they're still good in there, even in the monsters.
I love like a movie where like
that's the optimistic version.
Half of the Western Hemisphere is knocked out. You're like, it's an optimistic movie.
I mean, relatively sure. It was only half.
The Mist, feel good movie of the year.
Listen, all I know is that's an optimistic movie. I looked at that map and Montana was safe. That's all that mattered to me. So along the way, we also learned that these cities, they start out in San Jose, Central America. These cities are used to just regular creature attacks and they're outside of the infected zone at this point.
Right.
So like the creatures are a real problem beyond the wall, similar to Game of Thrones.
Yes.
The creatures are a real problem beyond the wall. The train's about to leave and Scoot's like, come on, we got to get the fuck out of here. He doesn't say it like that. He's like, come on, we got to get the fuck out of here. And she's like, okay, I have to go. And her dad's like, no, put him, who's there? Put him on the line. And so.
Oh, he's like, no, I don't want
to. Yeah, Scoot's like, uh-uh. And then she goes,
yeah, he's here. Hold on.
Yeah. Which is such an amazing dick move.
That she does. Yeah.
It's great. And so.
And he's just like, you know, it's my daughter, right?
Yeah. It's like, watch out for that scene. Like, take care of her. And it's like, well, no shit.
I know, it's ridiculous.
It's like, well, I was going to just throw her into the ocean and go back home, but I guess I'll watch out for her.
I guess if my job's on the line, boss.
Which, honest to God, another sign of dick. The only reason he's helping at all is because his job is on the line.
Yeah.
That's the entire motivation, which, to be entirely honest, my job being on the line would motivate me, too.
Yeah,
so
I hear you.
The train, they reach a point and the train has to turn back around. Like the tracks are broken. They have to turn around. And so they have a choice. Are they going to get off or keep riding the train? And Scoot's like, no, we're getting off. And she's like, are you sure? And she keeps asking this, like, are you sure? And he's like, yep. And the train goes away and there's nothing. And she doesn't say it, but there's this real subtext of her wanting to say, I told you so.
Which, you know. That's the marriage bleeding in there. I'm willing to bet. They probably went way off a script at this point.
It's the real subtlety.
Yeah.
They weren't even supposed to get on the train. So they find a family and they go stay with them and they find out that they have about 48 hours to catch a ferry to the U.S. and they're closing off that section, the place where the ferries leave. They're closing off entirely.
This, I have a question because maybe I missed something, but why? Why do they close off the ferry? That doesn't make sense.
They're quarantining it. They don't want to let anybody else through.
But I guess they're not allowed to go through the the quarantine zone.
Yeah, because remember, we do see the creature swimming around as well. So they want to like block off everything.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
So they have the 48 hours before they finally shut it down. This is actually a scene I really like. They just sort of sit and stay the night with this family and hang out with them and talk with them. And it's a really nice scene. They play with the kids. They wake up the next morning and Andrew Scoot's running around taking pictures. He has the kids pose with the gas masks on. A lot of the people wear gas masks because there's a lot of chemical weapons dropped in these areas.
Yeah, they haven't really like explained it yet.
But that's why they have the gas masks. And Sam is hanging out as well, talking to the kids, and eventually it's time for them to go. And Scoot, ever so eloquently, this is a running theme in the movie. He's never like, "Hey, are you ready to go? It's time to go." So I was like, "Come on!" He just starts walking away and just yells back, "Come on, it's time to go!" Yeah. As if like, "Listen, I'm going now. I don't really give a shit if you go, but here's your chance to come with me." Cool. So they hitch a ride. And they're going, you see helicopters just flying overhead. There's a lot of scenes of them passing things on the road.
I was kind
of
surprised that they were able to get the helicopters, or at least make it look like they got the helicopters.
Yeah, there's like the great, they're driving around. This happens a lot in the movie where anytime they're driving or sailing, like you'll see them pass just all this wreckage. There's like just like a helicopter just down in the middle of a road. There's tanks that are just sitting and rusted out.
And this is about where she's talking about the travesty.
Yep.
Or that doesn't it bother you that there has to be a tragedy for you to make money. And that's brought on because he's talking with the little kid and he's asking him when the last time a monster came through, and he was showing this tank that was in the middle of the water, and he said it was like 3 years ago.
Yeah.
He's like, "Oh, you must have been a baby, huh?" And he like takes a picture of him smiling, and then that's what brought that up. Because he's trying to get like to like the story that he wants, but he can't get it with the photograph, so he just takes a picture for himself more than anything.
Yeah, because this is the one, and the thing you get from that scene when he says, "You don't get paid anything," you get the sense that he's sort of a jade. Like, when he started, he was the guy who wanted to see, like, look, there are people thriving in these, like, he wanted the positive story, and that wasn't going to make him any money, and you sort of see, like, how he becomes this jaded, cynical guy.
Yeah, she, like, I mean, the thing is, the way she says it to him, and I don't know what you hear in the clip, but when you see her, it really looks like she's trying to needle him and make him feel bad about it.
Yeah, oh, yeah.
But, like, you can't really blame him.
Mm-hmm.
I mean,
because I don't know.
He's right on the situation. That is what the situation is. But on top of it, you can see through his actions, he's not just wanting the violence.
Yeah, that's not. He's not doing it. He's not doing the violence stuff because he likes it. He's doing it because that's what keeps him in a job.
Yeah. And once again, he's not creating.
Yeah. And so, like, that's sort of the great bit of that scene is that she's trying to needle him to make him feel bad about. She sort of sees it as exploiting these people's tragedy. And he's like, and she's trying to make him feel bad about it. And you see in the scene, he doesn't totally show up, but you get a sense that he does feel bad about it. But he's telling a story.
And I would say that overall thing would be the first point I would say in humans are monsters, and that, like, we do have this compulsion to see the negative thing, the tragedy, and, you know, people, newspapers never sell better than when a kid shoots up a school.
Yep.
I mean, I hate to say that, but it's true. A kid shoots up a school, news channels, executives are fucking licking their chops because they're just, people are going to be tuning in like crazy. That was why the ticker existed after 9/11.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it was just, we're making so much money, we need to just keep running the news over these commercials so that we can still make money. I mean, it was crazy.
Yeah, it's bananas.
Because people were flipping the channel so fast when I go to commercial. Yep. It's disgusting, but it's something.
It's the nature of the beast. Sure.
So there's exhibit A for our theory on what this movie is covering.
Mm-hmm. So they're driving and they get to this small little town where the ferries are at, and they cannot find anywhere to buy a ferry ticket. They see a bunch of people just waiting. They look around and they finally find one place that will sell them a ticket for $5,000.
Exhibit B. This dude is totally greedy, taking advantage of the situation.
Yep.
Milking him for as much money as he can. Yep.
And he gets it.
Yep.
He gets the $5,000.
Well, they have no other choice.
Yep. He gets the $5,000. They get a ticket for her. It's just for her. He's going to
he's basically going to leave her.
Yeah. He's going to let her go. He got her home, and he's going to go back and do whatever he does.
But they go back to their rooms. Then they decide to go out and get some drinks.
Yeah, which is a lot of fun, actually.
They have a fun exchange because they had this exchange with the guy where he's like...
the meteorologist?
Like, no. With the guy who's bilking him for money.
Oh,
and he's
like,
$2,000. And he's like, no. He's like, all right, $3,000. He's like, that's not going to do it. You need $5,000. then he's convincing her to go out for tequila shots with them. And he's like, two shots. She's like, no. He's like, well, then you owe me three.
Yeah. You know?
Well, I can't do it for less than five. You know what I mean? Like they're going through the whole exchange.
It's fun. There's another great little story he tells about he had a friend in college who was a big stoner, and his name was Joel. And he asked him what he wanted to be, and he's like, "Well, I'm studying to be a meteorologist." And Scoot goes, "Well, why?" And he goes, "Because it's the only job I can be wrong every day and still not get fired."
That was a nice little joke.
I thought that was a fun little thing.
Yeah, but then he continues to go on about how he married some girl and they were never going to make it.
He's like, you ever see those couples and you just know? And this is pretty clear that he's sort of testing her about her relationship. He doesn't really know, so he's trying to see where she's at.
Yeah, which is where she's getting kind of bad too, because like she's in a war zone. She's not talking to her fiance. She clearly doesn't want to be with them. Mm-hmm. And I mean, just by going out for drinks with this guy, she's basically, dude, let me tell you, as a married man, you're going to get fucking pissed if your wife like goes out with somebody and like another dude and gets drinks. It's just, it's the way that it is, you know, no matter how much you trust them, it's putting yourself in a bad position. It really is. Like, I'm just saying this from the married perspective. So, and she's got to know this deep down inside.
Yeah.
She totally knows it. She's a girl.
And he's fully ready to take advantage of it.
Oh, yeah.
Like, he's down to party.
I don't hate him as much in this moment because I get it, dude. Like, you're like, hey, it's in Mexico. What happens in Mexico stays in Mexico. I may not get out of here, but even if I do, I'll never see you again. Yeah.
Well, from his perspective, it really is. Well, listen, I mean, she's leaving at 7 a.m. tomorrow. What do I care?
Yeah.
It's like, what have I got to lose? And they go around. There's a great little bit after they party for a little bit. They go walk and they go to this church, and then they see the graves of people who've died in attack, and there's a mass grave of unknown dead. But when they get to this church and everybody gets quiet, this is, to me, the worst line of the movie. Like, all the noise and partying drops down. They cut, and he literally says, the vibe just changed. And I was just like, yeah, no, I got that. I put that together through the way the movie was cut and how the soundtrack. I did not need Scoot to tell me the vibe just changed. I could make that conclusion all by myself.
Yeah, that made me think maybe a kaiju monster was coming.
Yeah, but no, the vibe changed. And it really is like, if you take out that line, it's a cool scene seeing that transition between the two. But that line, that is a clearly could have been cut line.
Yeah, I agree. Like I said, there's always some dialogue in these movies that needs to get the axe, unless they're like seasoned.
Yeah.
This guy is clearly not seasoned yet. That's not to say he didn't do a great job. But.
Yeah. I mean, it's great for what it is. But I mean, to me, that's the best thing about it is you see this and you're like, wow, this is really good. And he can improve on it. Like, that's a good sign.
It's incredible for a first effort. It's no wonder they gave him like this giant freaking movie.
Yeah, no shit, right?
Yeah.
They while they're at that mass grave, they also see a no bombing protest sign that which sort of leads you to believe that a lot of these people aren't just dead from the creatures. They're dead from the chemical bombs and all the things that have been dropped to stop the creatures. And what we later learn are the nests all over the infected zone.
Yep. So once again, bad humanity again.
Yep. Yep.
It's Exhibit C right there.
Yep. So we get back to their hotel. She's got an awesome hotel room and Scoot sucks. And Scoot is drunk as fuck and is trying to hit on her. And this is where I was like,
trying to hit, dude.
Yeah, he's hitting on her. And this is where I was on her side. Like, she displays so much patience. Like, she could have been like, okay, seriously, you need to get the fuck. And she just sort of humors him and lets him. She basically lets him punch himself until he's tired.
That's what we call a cock tease in my world.
See, I think she could have just been like, dude, get the fuck out of here.
Exactly. Be straight with him. He's drunk. He's not going to care tomorrow.
Nope.
Because he immediately leaves that situation and does more shots.
Yep.
And apparently sleeps with a pair of feet because that's all we see in the morning.
No, we see her arms.
That's true. We see arms and feet.
Yep.
No torso. Yeah, This damn war.
He picks up a local girl, and so he goes out and just gets drunker, which was probably not the best decision, but he doesn't have to wake up for the 7 o'clock ferry, so what does he give a shit?
Right.
And she stays up and she calls her fiance and he doesn't pick up. And she's not pleased by this.
No. And so she goes over to get a cup of coffee with
the next morning.
See, now this is where she's horrible too, is like,
yeah,
she like fends him off after she puts herself in a bad situation. Then she's going out to get coffee with them. Like, once again, putting yourself in a bad position.
Yeah.
And she's knocking on the door and the dude's in his boxers, of course.
And then she sees the girl. She's like, you know, I changed my mind. And
oh, yeah. Goes, she's pissed. So it's immediately clear that.
Yeah.
Maybe something was going to happen from there to the ferry.
Yeah.
There was going to be there might have been a handy some or something.
Fooling about. And Scoot tries to put some pants and a shirt on, and it's not happening. So he just sprints off in his boxers.
Yeah, he runs out like Riggs and fucking Lethal Weapon 1 running after the car, dude.
It's great stuff. And he catches up with her, and they talk it out. And she's like, no, I'm just here waiting for the ferry. And he's like, well, why don't you get on the ferry? And she's like, you have my passport. And you just see this look of dread in his face.
Yeah, and I felt dread because I was just like, well, here it is. We knew they were going to go through the forbidden zone sometime. Yep. Or what do they call it?
The infected zone.
Yeah, I'm just going to call it the forbidden zone.
He runs back and digs through everything. The girl's gone. He can't find any of his... He can't find the wallet. He can't find the passports.
He has his camera, though.
He still has his camera.
Worth more than everything else he had.
Yep, yep.
That was a little hole, I think.
Well, no, because if you picture it as just like she grabbed the wallets and left. Like, you think there's going to be money in there, and then you're sadly disappointed.
Yeah.
At the very least, you got to be hoping for a credit card.
So they go back to the ferry master, and this exchange happens.
Yep.
I got robbed. So all I want is to get one ticket for her on the ferry back to America.
So my problem.
I know it's not your problem. I'm just asking you to help me out here.
As you can see, look, everything is closed. The army is out there. The navy is out there. Yesterday, you got all the possibilities. Today, no possibilities.
Yesterday, I paid you $5,000. Yesterday, I paid you $5,000.
Yesterday, today, no possible.
What do you mean there's no possible? You tell me there's no more ferries here.
Okay, what about by land?
You want to go to the defective zone?
No. No.
I do. I just want to get home. If that's the only way, I'll be happy to go.
It's going to be more expensive. I need to hire some people.
Okay, so yeah, they basically talk a bunch of Spanish and get the finite.
Yep.
He goes into everything that he needs to do as to why he's like suddenly gouging him for $10,000 now.
What a dick.
Exhibit D.
So Scoot tries to give up his camera and watch as collateral with the idea that being that he'll pay when he gets back. And he's like, nope. So Sam gives up her engagement ring, and the guy looks at it for
Exhibit
a little bit.
E.
Yeah. Well, this I don't fault so much, because even without everything else, like, you got to get back somehow. Yeah. And that's the only thing of value. What else of value do they have?
Yeah, she didn't wait too long to come to that conclusion, though.
What else was she going to give?
I don't know. The camera.
He literally tried it mere moments before.
I don't know. It's still
okay, scuzzy, tell you what. Dude. What would you have done?
What would I have done?
Yeah.
Knock him out and
get the fuck out.
I would have held up a newspaper and punched him in the face. I wouldn't have gotten anywhere, but that's as far as I thought it out when you just asked
me. You know,
me,
so. She made it back to America, so her plan might have been a little better.
Look, I hear what you're saying, but I'm also saying there's an element of I'm pissed at my fiance, and so I'm going to pawn my ring.
Well, sure, but it's not like she walks in and she just hand... Like, she clearly sits on it for a while. She's clearly thinking about it while Scoot's trying to negotiate with him. Because, again, offers money, remember? There's that whole long argument.
You say sits on it for a while like she was debating it in her head. I say
no,
sits
she
on
tries
it for
other
a while.
Things.
I say sits on it for a while because she's waiting for a chance to talk.
No, she does. She offers him. She tries to explain like how rich her dad is. She tries too. That's the only option they had left. What would you have had her do?
I mean, eventually the ring. I just felt like she gave it up a little too quick.
But there was nothing else to give up. What should she have just sat there and waited an hour?
Called the dad, wired some money.
You think that dude was gonna let?
Yep.
I don't think that dude was going to let that happen.
You don't think he was going to accept money?
No, he didn't believe her. He wouldn't have let her call.
If she would have been like, I'm going to go over to this other place and get some money wired, like, Can you
where
give
are
me,
they wiring it
can
to
you give me like
over there, by
hours?
The way? Who's the only sign of life we see in that little place? Him?
There's all kinds
his
of
little
life
buddy,
in that place.
The girl.
Well, hold on. There's all kinds of life in that place. There's a whole village.
I mean,
like,
did you see
bars.
Yeah, a village? Did you see a bank?
I don't know. No, but that doesn't mean it's not there. Obviously, if they have a fairy community, that money's got to go somewhere.
The fairy community is the U.S. Navy.
There's though. Bars. Like, there's a... There's obviously got to be some sort of bank.
Yeah, I don't think you're getting that kind of money wired there.
I'm just saying it's a possibility that she didn't even explore.
She didn't remember. Like, she said, we can get you money. And he's like, no.
I don't know.
You don't remember that scene?
I don't know. I'm just saying she gave up the ring a little too quick.
She gave up the ring after they tried everything else they had on
them. I would use as evidence, like, everything she does with that guy as evidence.
Oh, yeah. No, listen, I'm not saying that's not the only factor, but it's not like she walked in there, gave the ring, and, like, that. It's not like that was her game plan.
I didn't say that's what she did. I just said she gave it up a little too easily.
See,
she got in a fight. She got in a fight with him, and it was just like there was no sentimentality.
I think you might be just letting a little bias shade. Like, what else was she? I just don't understand that. They did everything they could have done except that before they did it.
Right, but I'm saying that except that is the important one. Like, really trying to get that money wired, because it's not like they had X amount of time to go through the Forbidden Zone. That's always forbidden.
No, remember, they still have the time limit because they're shutting everything down.
But what would they already shut down the Forbidden Zone? That was the ferry that they shut down.
No, they were shutting down the entire wall because the ferry. That's why the ferry was getting shut down.
Well, because
they weren't allowing passage through the wall anymore.
Yeah, but it's not like they made it through on time.
No. But they made it through because, remember, they have to get picked up in Texas.
Yeah, I'm just saying she was a little quick with the ring. That's all.
All I'm saying is I don't know. Like, the only way she could have drawn that on anymore is just sit silently for an extra 20 minutes.
No, like, go around and look for a place to wire money. That's what I'm saying. There might be a Western Union.
There's almost definitely a Wells Fargo in this destroyed community.
You don't know. You don't know until you try. I'm just saying that community is the least destroyed community we see the entire
movie. And it's still a
movie. Shit
show.
I don't think that one was so bad.
It's not great.
It's not great, but that's Mexico, dude.
They have
nothing's great in Mexico.
There's just open mass graves throughout the town. Like, we're not talking about Poughkeepsie here. Okay, so in any case, she gives up the ring.
This is a real Siskel and Ebert moment right there.
In any case, she gives up the ring, and they get their passage through.
Poor. I'm just fucking around.
So they get on the boat and you start them. You see them float through destruction. There's a lot of driving through destruction, floating through destruction. They get off and you hear a monster call, and they're sitting in the boat. Yep, exactly like that.
Yeah.
Eerily like that.
No wonder he got the Boba Fett movie.
And you see shit. You see something swimming up to them, and everybody else is like, we gotta get the fuck out of here. And Scoot's like, I'm gonna take some pictures right now. Now's a great time, because this is his other thing. Is like,
we learn pretty fast that's a bad idea.
Yeah. Oh, very.
And we
bad.
Learn why, because he's not. He said multiple times that he's never seen a monster alive.
Yeah, and he really wants to get a picture of a monster.
But when he's taking the pictures, like they beam the light back, or like if
they're attracted
they're light
to the light.
Sensitive,
yeah,
for sure. So they usually attack in the dark, which I assume they had that because you couldn't see the special effects as well.
That's part of it, yeah.
I mean, I get that.
The monster scenes you see at night, because that hides a lot of the...
Yeah, that's what I assumed he did it for, and then like built the mythology around that, which mm-hmm. is smart. I mean,
yeah,
that's great. Give him
and
a reason.
And there's actually
to be in
something
the dark,
similar. But. You see this? He Gareth Edwards in his monster stuff that we've seen in two movies, so I guess not a huge sample size, but he seems to really like bioluminescence as an idea in nature. Because the creatures in this are bioluminescent. The Mutos in Godzilla are bioluminescent. And when Godzilla uses his atomic breath in the movie, he's bioluminescent. And these creatures sort of feed off, it seems like, light and electricity. And the Mutos in Godzilla feed off nuclear energy. Mm-hmm. So there's a lot of similarities in his monster. You can tell there's certain ideas in the monsters that he's very interested in. So they survive. They get dropped off, and they have to go by land from here on out. And they get dropped off with a group of, like, an armed convoy. Like an
entirely new group.
Yep, too. Entirely so new group.
They're a little freaked out by that.
Yeah, Scoot especially. Scoot does not like guns. Yeah. He is very perturbed by the guns.
I'm in Scoot's camp.
Yeah, me too.
It's
me
scary and Scoot living are in Montana for me.
Me and Scoot are on the same page on this one.
There's probably 25 guns stashed in this attic that I didn't know about just because it's Montana.
It's true. I found a gun in my pantry today. I don't own a gun.
Did you really?
No, that I just thought that'd be a fun visual.
I believe it.
Go to grab some Lucky Charms and there's an AK-47 chilling out behind it.
Oh, I guess somebody from Kill Bill is hanging out in my house now. Very funny, bitch. Very funny.
Yes. So they get dropped off the armed convoy, and they're walking through, and they hear a creepy noise that sort of sounds like the monster noise, and everybody gets a little just like that, and everybody gets a little skittish.
But it's a cow.
It's a cow. And Scoot's like, oh, really goddamn. I like that.
Scoot. And then I immediately realized they totally used some cow noises for the monster noises, too.
Yeah, they're like mixed in. It's cool.
Yeah. And you could tell they were like animal noises for sure.
It's basically they combined a whole bunch of different animal noises and some digital effects. And
which is how they came up with Chewbacca. Yep. Actually, they took a bear and a dog and lions.
Yeah.
And they like mixed them all
into one big blender, which is the coolest way to do it. You get cool sounds that way.
Definitely.
So they sit down for the night and they talk a little bit. This is the scene I was talking about where the guy sort of thinks the U.S. is just wasting money in a fight against nature. They won't win. They've seen creatures and they've learned how to avoid them by just leaving them alone and staying away from places like right after or before a plane goes over them, which is foreshadowing.
Yeah.
And, because we learned the plane make the monsters angry.
And the plane make the monsters angry.
Plane make monster mad. And then they talk about the infected trees, and Scoot and Sam
this
are like,
is where
what?
We find out about the infected trees.
Yes. Yeah. And so he's like, oh, you want to see one of the guards? And they go out and they look, and you see these little glowing nests. They look like sort of like they almost look like Godzilla spines like stuck into the tree, like little stairs.
And they have like
pouches,
aborigine shell kind of look to them. Like very rainbowy and
it's like
shiny,
like a light orange and sort of pulsates. They show it. He puts a flashlight on and they start flashing. They start smoke. Pulsating and flashing their lights, and then Scoot, like a dipshit, just wraps his knuckles on the tree, and the one next to him starts freaking out.
Yeah, not a good idea.
Nope. And Sam immediately says, I don't think you should be touching it.
Yeah. They also introduce the idea into this that, and this is another thing where it mirrors humanity, I think. Like, so they come from the trees and then they go down into the water and then to whatever they do. But like, it's sort of like mankind. Like, we probably, you know, we came out of the water at some point. The water was like the start of our lives and stuff. We're definitely in the trees at some point. I just thought I could kind of see like a parallel there.
Yeah, the thematic stuff, I think the strongest parts of this movie are the thematic stuff and the character dynamics.
It is, because if you're just watching this without thinking about the bigger message, it's a boring movie.
Yeah.
But if you're actually like
there are good moments in it. Like, there's fun moments in it.
I don't know. For me, the fun is like the undertones of it, like kind of digging and like.
Well, I still think like the scene of them, like the tequila shot scene where they're sort of running around the little village is fun.
That's kind of fun, but that's definitely out of character for the rest of the movie.
Oh, definitely. But I mean, there are moments, and I think a lot of the stuff at that family early on is fun. Like, there are interesting little moments within it, but it's a road movie, and like all road movies, if the thematic stuff doesn't work, it's gonna be a long dry trip.
Do you think if John Candy were still alive, he would have reteamed with Steve Martin to make this movie?
100%. Almost certainly. Who would have played Scoot's role?
Steve Martin.
All right, cool.
Beautiful. Wait, no, the girl's more uptight, right? That's Steve Martin. John Candy would be Scoot.
A plane then flies over and they get the fuck out of there. But to no avail. They get in their little trucks, they start rolling off, and a creature comes. Oh, no, wait, I skipped something. It's the next morning. And the creature comes the next morning after they stay there, despite the plane flying over. We literally a conversation ago, plane's bad, get the fuck out when a plane crosses.
Yeah.
But a plane crosses and they just stay at their camp.
Yeah. No, there is some uneven parts of this movie. Yeah. For sure.
And they're talking. Scoot and Sam are the only two left awake and they're talking. And if there was any doubt that these two were going to be together by the end of the movie, which there shouldn't have been, but if you had some doubt, it's gone in this scene where they have like some nice little vaguely romantic conversation. And he takes a look at her hand, which was hurt at the beginning of the movie, and straight up kisses it. And then they go to sleep.
He like takes some reeds and makes a ring for her.
it's a beautiful moment.
Fucking right. That doesn't happen.
He gets some rocks and makes little diamonds. Yeah. It's a beautiful moment.
And then she immediately gives it to like the guy who's leading the squad because they need it again.
So then the creature comes as they go to sleep. It's just the guy. The creature comes. Everybody gets up and get the fuck out of there. Like they are like the trucks are started almost instantly. Like you can tell this is not the first time they've had to make a quick escape. So everyone's getting on the trucks except Scoot, like a dipshit. Scoot's sort of a douche and he's not all that bright because he's like, no, where's my camera? I'm not leaving without my camera.
This I got to stand up for. I know that seems like a dumb move.
It's
but
a dumb
that move. That is how war photographers are.
No, though. I understand like, that.
Danger come.
No, I'm not saying it's unrealistic. I'm not saying it's unrealistic. I'm saying it's stupid. That's a stupid decision to make.
It's kind of a stupid like career to have if you want to have a long life.
It's like a storm chaser. Like I understand that it's real. I just think it's stupid that people do it.
Yeah, I'm just saying like that to me made sense.
No, my complaint isn't that it didn't make sense. It's that fucking giant monster, like in the fight versus flight response, take flight. Get the fuck out. and they get driving. The creature catches up, so they shut everything down because they don't want to leave any lights. This does not dissuade the creature from grabbing the car and swinging
something
the fuck
around.
Something
I noticed in this movie, with the exception of those two, anytime anybody hides in a vehicle, the vehicle gets thrown.
Yep.
Unless it's those two. Yep. Those two get a pass for
they
some reason.
They did get a pass.
Everybody else gets thrown.
Well, remember, everybody left their dome lights on inside the truck, and Scoot was the only one who went and like busted it out.
Oh, I didn't even
Scoot
notice
Scoot busted
that.
Out the dome light.
Okay, that makes sense.
Because remember, the car in front of them also still had its headlights on.
Okay.
Yep. So theirs was the only one that had the lights completely shut down by the end of it. Which, I mean, it's still a little bit coincidental, but anytime a hero survives an improbable situation in a movie, it's going to be a little coincidental.
Yeah.
But at least they made an attempt to justify it. So they survive. They just stay in the truck for the night. They get out the next morning. She stays asleep, and Scoot goes around and starts salvaging things off the bodies. He finds a camera.
This is the last time that we really have trouble at night until the end of the movie, right?
Yep.
Let me just get this out of front here right now. This is what bothers me, is that from this point on, no problem going out at night at all.
Yeah.
Ever. No problem at all.
Well,
oh, it's nighttime. Let's be loud and walk around.
Hang on. You say no problem, but they do have another problem again at night, at the end of the movie.
I'm not talking about the end of the movie, though. I'm talking about...
Yeah, but you can't say no problem again.
I did say at the
end
of the movie,
though. And there's only one night in between.
But I literally did say until the end of the movie. Like,
yeah, but there's only one night in between that and the end of the movie. So
I think there was like two. Uh-uh.
It's not just the one.
Because they spent the one night on the pyramid and the other night... Before the pyramid.
No, that's the one we literally just talked about where monsters murdered everybody but them.
I don't know. So, they seem like they're cavalier.
So
the
and
dark.
Remember the one night they survive, there's no lights. It's just them alone on the pyramid. And remember the other thing we learned is if you stay at high ground, you're safe. We learned that in the little conversation.
Can we pretty much cut to the pyramid part?
Yeah,
Does anything significant happen between them? I don't feel like it does.
The only thing I have is they have that moment with the kid's body that like fucks them up for the next couple scenes when they talk.
Moment with the kid.
So remember when he's salvaging, he finds that dead kid and he thinks about taking a picture of the kid because he talked about seeing a kid killed by a creature will get you $50,000. And he starts to take a picture, and instead he just basically buries the body with a coat And that's right as Sam comes around and looks over at him, and it's bad time. So this is around the same time he sees the body, but you only get sort of a look at it, but you just see ribs and guts torn out of a dude. And he takes the camera and a gas mask off that, and he takes a gas mask off another body. So that's all they have is the camera and the gas masks.
Okay, I remember him ripping off the gas mask too, which I was just like, gross.
Yeah, oh, very. Well, you see, like, in that scene, he almost vomits.
Yeah.
So, yeah, we'll cut to the pyramid, and this is a lot of the pyramid. So
she goes to piss and then sees, like, a giant Aztec pyramid.
Yeah, which is pretty cool.
Which I guess just happens to be by the Mexican-American border.
Yeah, it's pretty close.
I feel like, and this is maybe this is just me, but I feel like if there really was a pyramid that close to the border.
There's not one.
Right. I was going to say, if there was one, we would have totally like made our border farther south. Kept the pyramid. Because you got to keep in mind, we took like a third of Mexico, like all of the country. We took it.
No, remember the border is based on where things are like infected and irradiated.
Oh, I thought...
Yeah, no, the border's based on the infected zone.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right, I just thought the wall was, like, on the U.S. border.
Well, part well, of it is. At that remember, point. We see the map, part of it is. Right. But...
Okay.
Yeah, no, the border is meant to delineate between infected and not infected.
Okay. But it does clearly lead into the U.S. beyond that wall.
Yes.
So that...
It leads into Texas.
My point is
that.
Valid.
Yeah, well, that part does, yeah.
We would have totally taken that shit if...
If it hadn't been infected.
If it was there. No, I mean... In real life,
yeah. Well,
in
yeah.
real life, if there, if that,
we would have dealt with the infection.
No, this is forget about the infection. We're talking hundreds of years before the infection.
Oh yeah, yeah. Oh yeah, that
like
would
during
have been
the Mexican American War.
That would have been ours.
We would have taken that. Yeah, we would have been like, I want the pyramid too. Yeah. The border starts here, 20 yes. miles from where we originally thought. He started drawing the map, and now we're telling you, no, we're taking yeah, this, that pyramid
we want
too.
The pyramid.
The border now dips down in a U. I'm just saying.
A little dongle on Texas for where the pyramid goes.
I hate to make a big deal of this, but I saw that, and I was immediately like, no way. There's like monsters running around. I can accept that in my mind. I cannot accept that we wouldn't have taken the pyramid 100 years ago.
So they spend the night at the pyramid and talk about a whole bunch of stuff.
That's another part where you really get the feeling that part of this is about talking about erecting that wall between yep. Mexico and America, because yep. he talks about how foreboding it looks when you're on the other side yeah. looking in.
Yeah, he talks specifically about how weird it is. They talk about what they're going to do when they get back. And he's like, I mean, everything that's happened to us won't matter as soon as we cross that border. Mm-hmm. Which is not quite the case.
No, not at all.
But
it was a nice thought.
Yeah, it was a nice thought. They talk about his son a little bit. And he's been estranged. It was the product of a 2-month relationship. And 2 years later, he was told he had a child, but that it wasn't going to be his kid. He could talk to the kid, but he couldn't really have a relationship with the kid.
Which is fucked up.
Yeah. And so he has a hard time trying to balance like how much is too much to talk to the kid, but he still clearly wants to be a part of the kid's life. It's a very touching little bit of the story. It really is.
Yeah. It's pretty brutal. Right
yeah.
There.
Especially that last scene at the, well, we'll get to it.
Yeah. And that's exhibit F. I would say how his yeah. ex acts with the kid.
Well, in fairness, him. We don't know if that was specifically his ex's idea or the person she was with's idea. We know it's her who told
regardless,
him.
Regardless, it's humanity's
yeah,
idea.
Yeah, it's humanity's idea.
This leads into my point.
Yeah, somebody involved in that other relationship was being a dick to him. Possibly both of them. Let's yeah. not rule out the combination of the two. So they get to this ghost town in Texas, and it was clearly not a ghost town until fairly recently.
Yeah, they walk through, actually, like, visually, I really like this.
Yeah,
like,
it's really cool.
They're walking along the wall, and then they find this portion that's open. I guess that traffic could get through. This is one thing that didn't make sense to me, was there's that giant open part of the wall that
that's
was
like
clearly
broken
built
through,
open.
Yeah.
But I'm like, why would you leave that open if the monsters can come through?
Yeah, well, you notice the road gets cut off. And like when they walk up, the road just stops at the edge of the wall. I'm wondering if the plan wasn't to close it along with the rest of the wall they were closing down.
Could be. They just
like,
haven't gone around.
That's the way yet. I've always read it, is that they were going to go through and basically fill in all the holes.
They were just at the very end?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
I think
that.
They went, built the wall between the roads, then started cutting off all the roads and ferries and then filling things in.
I almost wondered if it was a stopgap to get the monsters and deal with them on their own term.
Yeah.
But that clearly wasn't because nope. there wasn't any military around there.
Nope.
that's where I could have built or believed the stopgap, is if there was tons of military watching that. Mm-hmm. And they're just like, we're going to pick them off.
But there was not. And as they walk around, they see, this to me is the coolest creature shot in the movie, or at least one of them. I think the Redding scene at the end is pretty cool in terms of the visual, but this is the one of the few times you see a creature in broad daylight, because it's just a dead creature. Because the hardest thing with those CGI things is to animate the motion and make it not look weird.
Yeah.
And so when it's just still like that,
you didn't succeed on that with the tentacles.
The tentacles.
And you see them close up later.
Yeah, the tentacles move very strange. I actually think the monsters themselves look really cool. I think it's the tentacles that are the problem in the effects. Because like the basic, like those spidery limbs, like the basic design, the little squid head, I think looks cool.
I gotta be honest, I wasn't in love with the design of the monster. Once again, like the fact that this dude did it himself is incredible. I'm not trying to take away from
it. It's not my favorite design either. I think the tentacles are the biggest problem.
Yeah, this is one movie where I probably would have, I don't know, gotten somebody else to design the monsters. I don't know, maybe farmed it out if you could afford it.
That's the thing, is I don't think they could afford it.
Right, and I get that. I get that he's doing what he needed to do to get the movie out, and that's cool. I wasn't in love with the monster, let me put it that way.
I don't think they're the worst I've ever seen, but
they're not even in my top 1,000.
I don't think I can think of 1,000 separate monsters.
If like, you gave completely. Me enough time, I could do it. Like I know that I've seen like well over 1,000 monster movies.
Well, see, I guess the reason I don't think I could do it is like, I'm not going to
count. Nosferatu had a werewolf and Nosferatu.
that's the thing I was going to say, is like, I'm counting each movie's designs for all of it. That's how I would count it, rather than monster design.
Each individual monster design.
But even then, I can think of a shitload I don't like. Where I like a lot less than this one.
Yeah, I could come up with that too. That's not the point.
That's less fun than to say you could find better.
It only sticks out because the rest of the movie is so well done.
Yeah. Well, I guess my thing is like, to me, you can go either way. You can probably find a shitload better, but you can find a shitload worse.
Okay,
too.
Let me put it this way. The reason why it sticks out for me personally, mm-hmm. I have a thing with bad CGI.
Yeah.
I just do. Yeah. There's nothing that sticks out to me more than bad CGI.
Yeah.
In fact, I can like deal with a rubber monster way easier than I can deal get
past
with bad
it.
CGI.
I can totally get past it.
I can't lose.
To me, it has to be to the point where it's unwatchable because of the CGI. Like, to me, the CGI I have a problem with is where it may be technically very good, the Transformer stuff, where it's, I can't fucking understand what's happening anymore. Like, that I can't handle. I cannot handle
too
it.
Too many gears.
Yeah, too much shit going on. I can't handle it.
Yeah, that I can handle a little better, but it's bad CGI. I can't. Like, and I don't know why. Maybe it's because I was watching movies like right when bad CGI mm-hmm. became a thing. Say like 1990.
Yeah, because see, I've grown up with CGI being a part of movies almost as long as I can remember. So to me, like I can just get past it.
It was like introduced, and so when it was first introduced, the first time I really remember it was like Terminator 2, and I was like, wow. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you see that.
Which, by the way, still totally holds up effects wise. But
same with Jurassic Park.
That's what's frustrating, is like you see the first example of it and it still holds up, and then you see just bad fucking CGI sometimes, and you're like,
yeah.
Ugh.
Well, I'm also like, to me, I do CGI on a sliding scale as well. Like if a $250 million movie has bad CGI, that's a bigger problem to me than when the $500,000 movie has bad CGI.
And once again, I'm trying to be forgiving to the movie. I just noticed it, like, bad CGI will always stick out like a sore thumb.
Yeah, I can totally get past it.
You will hear it on this podcast every time I think something's bad CGI. You'll hear about it.
Yeah, I totally get past it. Like, to me, it has to be horrific for it to be worth
CGI.
Like, I need it to be horrific to be worth mentioning.
Maybe,
like, I just
maybe
totally...
we'll make that a new segment on the show. Like, Biggs is bad CGI.
You could, because I think
that's
you
our
probably...
new segment today to make up for the no prize that we couldn't get you.
There
this
we
time.
Go. You probably hold CGI to a higher standard than I do as well.
It's not that I hold it to a high standard. It's just
no, but higher than
bad,
what I hand it to.
This is my standard. If I notice it, it's mm-hmm. a problem.
Yeah, see, I can notice it and get past it.
Like, I don't want to see something and think, oh, that's CGI. I want to be lost in the moment and just believe it's there.
At the same time, with stuff like giant monsters and superheroes and shit, like, this is my other thing, is like, there's no amount of CGI in the world that can convince me it's not fake, so it almost doesn't matter to me.
No, and
so.
I know that, but I don't don't want to spend the moment thinking about how it's fake.
Well, see, that's the thing
that's where CGI
unless it's horrific, I don't even think about it at all. But like, I just know going in and
but this was something in this particular movie that could have been done easily with practical effects, I think. Not for like off in the distance necessarily, but like when you had the tentacles in the... So they walk along, they get to a gas station. Yeah. We might as well get that far. He goes out, he talks to his
son and has his breakdown. Scoot really kills that scene.
Yeah.
Scoot's really good.
At the same time, she's... did she call her fiance?
Yeah.
Yeah, I can't even remember what their conversation was.
It's basically just like her saying, yeah, you can tell she's just out. Like, she wants no part of it.
Yeah.
But she still says she loves him at the end of the phone call, which that to me is like, come on, don't lie to him. Like, don't do that.
Yeah. Then, like, the tentacles come into the, like, all of a sudden it's, you see it's on top of the gas station.
And they start.
And the tentacles start coming through and kind of coming around her. Now, this is the thing where I would have used practical effects.
Mm-hmm.
I just feel like you could have used like strings and rubber or something.
Here's the other thing is
effective
at the budget level they are dealing with. This is one of the very rare times that practical effects are actually more expensive than CGI.
Really?
Well, yeah. Cause listen, all he was paying for, he had already paid for the program, had already paid for the computer, and he wasn't paying labor.
So it was all free at this point.
Exactly. So the only thing he was losing was work hours, basically.
Okay.
So
but
like,
it's that really stuck out.
Yeah, to me. Like to that, ugh. You have to get to plus, like when you think of it from his.
I was more forgiving of them in the background in the dark, because I was like, at least he's trying to hide the bad CGI. Like my mind was like, at least he's trying to hide it.
Well,
the tentacles, I was like, oh, why can't you make the gas station darker?
Yeah, and that scene in particular, the tentacles don't look great.
Yeah, they don't.
And the tentacles are my biggest problem with the design in general. I don't think they're all
and
that
they're
great.
All tentacles though.
No, they've like, got like the big spiny and they've got the squid head too. Like if it was the big spiny legs, like the insect style legs and the squid head, just that,
but
I'd
I'm
be down.
I'm saying they're like 3/4 tentacles. And every reveal of the creature is like reveal the tentacles.
Well,
somehow.
No, because they've got like that web of tentacles in the center that extend out.
Yeah. But I'm saying like even like every time you see them do something, it's...
Oh, it's always with the tentacles. Seeing, the tentacles are always involved. Yeah.
Yeah. Which is where it also reminded me of The Mist. But weirdly enough, for an unhappy ending, this is way happier than The Mist. And that just said.
See, it's an optimistic movie relative to what it is. Relative to
you're
other...
right. If you're going to compare it to The Mist, it is an optimistic ending. Which, by the way, I kind of hope that we pull sometime, but I'm seriously worried about, like, I might have to go into suicide watch if I watch that movie again.
Yeah. So, we see the tentacles go through and it starts like sucking energy from the TV and she unplugs the TV and the monster sort of retreats back and it's been making these calls this whole time. And so a second monster comes up and this is where we see the rutting scene I was talking about. They do their mating ritual basically.
Yeah.
And like leaving sort of the design out of it, the way it's sort of basked in the shadows, like the silhouette against the night sky and like the flashing from the head. I think that as a visual idea works
I did
really
like that.
Well.
No, that part I was okay with.
Yeah. And so you get that cool scene. You get them, they're just sort of watching in awe as they see this. And then the creatures go their separate ways. And then my favorite creature CGI shot in the movie is the one at the end where the creature's walking away and it's completely black. You can't see it. And then lightning flashes. And so you see the silhouette briefly. And then you see the head do its little light echo in response as it walks off. Like that was a really cool shot.
Cool.
That's
too.
My favorite
CGI shot.
I'll give
in the movie. That up for that part. Yeah.
Yeah. And this is the other thing is like,
so see, I'm fair. It's not all bad. Sure. I'm not being unfair with this. Well, but there is bad CGI too.
Oh yeah. There's bad
there's
CGI.
Good
it's
and
just
there's bad.
I don't care all that much about it.
I know.
That's so I will say this though. Like the other thing about not using practical is like this dude, it's clearly Gareth Edwards' movie from top to bottom. This is his baby on every level. And I think the other reason he may have not wanted to do practical is that he didn't know how and he didn't want somebody else doing the creatures. Like, I think that may have been part of it as well.
Maybe.
Just plain old creative.
That is a little ego.
Yeah, a little. But sure, yeah, but I mean, how many directors are there who have no ego? Like, I can't think of any.
Oh, no, there's not a single one. I'm just calling it to see it.
If anything, it would have been more upsetting if he showed no ego throughout the entire process.
You know which director doesn't have much of an ego? Kevin Smith, dude. That is a guy yeah. whose like, ego is in the toilet at all times.
And Uwe Boll.
I still don't know who that is.
He's actually... He's sometimes no... Anyway, he's so irrelevant to this at this point. So they...
We're essentially at the end of the movie.
Yeah, the creatures wander off. The army off. Shows up and they get...
By the way, leads to a shot that I really loved. You see like the army car. I don't even know what to call it. Yeah. Like drive by on the road for a second. You just hear him go... Da, da,
da, da, da, da, da. Yeah, the callback to the first movie.
That is so funny, dude. And the Valkyrie, like... It's basically like Apocalypse Now, yep. but it's like super low grade. Like.
But it's also a callback to the first scene where the army guys get torn the fuck up, because there's a guy in that car singing Valkyries as well, and he goes, "That's my theme song."
Oh, somehow I missed that.
Yeah, so it's a callback to that opening scene as well.
I didn't even get that.
So yeah, she says she doesn't want to go home. They kiss, and then the army trucks show up. Like, you got to get the fuck out.
And they grab both of them and split them up.
Split them up and drive off. And that's the end of the movie.
Okay, so this leads me to how the villain could have won. Because clearly, to me, the villain is humanity. Uh-huh. Because they're saying that humanity is the monsters. Uh-huh. So here's how the villain could have won. Hey, and you're... Forbidden zone? What do we call
infected
it again?
Zone?
Infected zone? Try dropping fucking fire bombs next time, dude. What's everything growing off of?
Trees.
Yeah.
I mean...
Yeah, trees.
No, they talked about...
It's almost like you went out of your way to, like, gas everything.
I hate to tell you this. They talked about just dropping regular bombs, too, in the movie.
Yeah, do it.
They did.
Firebomb the shit out of it like it's Japan, dude. Just firebomb the hell out of it.
Fair enough. And since humans are the villain, you don't have to feel bad about all those people who are going to fucking die.
Hey, I'm saying how the villain could have won.
And it's true. No, you're right. The villain would have won.
Yeah, I'm not... The only time you won't hear how the villain would have won is maybe a documentary.
The villain...
No, I did that for the bear, too. Never mind.
The villain won... The villain would have won this one the same way Russia beat Germany in World War II, just by sort of outlasting and being willing to watch a lot of their own people die.
I mean, they had a little help, too.
Mm-hmm. But just the sheer willingness to let their own people die so they can win, like that sounds a lot like humanity to me.
Yeah, yeah, it does. So it sure does.
One last thing
Exhibit
I wanted to talk about.
G.
I am not excited for the sequel that started filming in March of 2013.
Oh, they're filming another one?
Yeah, now wait. Here's why I'm not excited for it. If they just told me Monsters 2, he and Scoot are the executive
Please
producers.
Please tell me it's not Monsters University.
No. Thank God. I can't remember. Let me bring it up. I have the title written down.
How would they even clear that?
That would be the best. the Monsters Dark Continent. Now, if I just heard it, I'd be into it. But Gareth Edwards and Scoot McNairy, the executive producers, completely different writer, director, and cast.
Yeah.
So I'm out. Nothing. I want no part of it.
That shit happens.
Yeah.
They're just like, all right, I'm just going to collect the check off of this because I'm busy doing my second Godzilla movie.
And then I, yeah, exactly. And my,
and my Boba Fett
yeah,
movie.
Exactly. I've got my Star Wars. I've got the sweet Mickey Mouse checks coming in. Fuck all y'all.
Sam Raimi kind of did that too.
Yep.
Now that he's got the big Hollywood movies, he's like, yeah, you go ahead and make a remake of Evil Dead, which I will say is badass. But anyway. Okay. So should we move on to our next movie here?
Yep. Let's figure out our next film.
Okay, so we start out with the Rotten Tomatoes we do first?
Yes.
Okay, so this is like a sci-fi kind of horror deal.
Yeah.
Not typically beloved by critics, however, is independent. That gives it a bump.
Uh-huh.
I'm going to say like 63.
I'm going to say 70.
Okay, what do we
got? I think it's
going to
be right in that ballpark. 71, I was so close.
Fuck.
So close.
Okay, so we are...
I was off one. You said 63, right?
Yeah.
You were off 8, so 9.
So 9, okay. We are back on dramas again.
Nice.
Never getting off of dramas.
At least, though, drama is such a nebulous genre that we could get all sorts of fun stuff in here.
Yeah. Okay, so now for subgenre, we go off of the budget number. Is that right?
Yeah. I feel like we've done budget and gross at various points.
Well, we always try and do budget first.
Yeah.
And then budget, if we can't find the budget, we go to the gross.
So budget is $500,000.
Okay, so we'll go one for each $100,000.
Yes.
So we're on crime dramas. Again, crime dramas,
yes,
dude.
Who doesn't love a good crime drama?
So what was the number that you wanted?
So the number... Now, this number could be mistaken, but by my count, the distinct monster, the number of distinct monsters we see in the movie Monsters is seven.
Seven. Yep. Okay, so that's the number you want to do?
Yep. Okay. And that counts, in case anyone else is counting, I counted footage on TV.
I want to read what we skipped over we're going to the...
Oh, no.
Because this is an interesting wrinkle.
Oh,
Silence
no.
of the Lambs, Backdraft, Gattaca, Fargo again, Donnie Brasco, and Bernie. And on the other side, we have Jesse Stone, No Remorse.
Oh, wow. That could have gotten dark. So we dodged the Jesse Stone bullet.
So we landed on Charlie Countryman.
Huh.
From 2013. A young American falls hard for a Romanian cellist whose father has recently died and whose violent past could bring about his own demise. Starring Shia LaBeouf, Evan Rachel Wood, Mads Mikkelsen from Hannibal fame.
Yeah.
Created by Frederick Bond.
Sure. All right.
Yeah. I'm interested.
Yeah.
It's got Shia LaBeouf on the cover, so it's tough. But I'm kind of interested.
Yeah, I mean, this is one like, especially based on the description, this is one that could easily go either way. This could be unwatchable, or it could end up being really good, or it could just be sort of okay. Like, this one could cover the gamut. I have no idea what to expect from this movie. It's a terrible title.
I've literally heard nothing about
it. I've never heard of this before. Can we agree? Not a great title.
No.
Not a great title.
Charlie Countryman.
That's a real problem.
That's sort of like being named Danny Everyman.
Yeah, that just doesn't work.
Yeah.
All right. Well, I guess all I have to say is grab some popcorn. We'll see you on Netflix with Charlie.